A Mother's Day Sermon by Reverend Richard A. Rehm, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan on May 13, 2001, in the series Credo, entitled Mary, Mother of God or Jewish Mother. The texts for the sermon are Acts 1, verses 12 through 14, Luke 1, verses 26 through 35, and Mark 3. Verses 19 through 35. Copyright, Grand Valley State University.
On this Mother's Day, and day in which we celebrate the Christian family, the human family, I thought it would be well to tie the two together with the Eastertide series on Credo, I believe. I tried to say last week that the mystery of the Christian story, the Christian revelation, is that when God is revealed supremely, God is revealed in the human, and that the human becomes the container or the agent of the divine. Not that we are human, we are only on the way to being human. We are beckoned by the Spirit to transcend that which we've yet known. But in our midst there was this one whom they said, now that's it, and we are beckoned to fulfill our humanity, because to be human thus would be to be divine. The Creed, the Apostles' Creed, the most common creed that we share, is very clear about the fact that the Christian drama is rooted in history. Conceived of the Holy Spirit, born of the Virgin Mary, suffered under Pontius Pilate, crucified, dead, buried. The drama that we celebrate in the Christian tradition is rooted solidly in history. And of course, that word that became flesh had a mother. And in order to get at what I want to deal with this morning, just briefly with you, I raise the question of Mary. Was she a mother of God or a Jewish mother? The Church, of course, defined her as the Mother of God in the development of its creedal tradition. In 431, in the Common Era, in Ephesus, the Council of Ephesus declared Mary to be Theotokos, a Greek word meaning God-bearer. And from that point, it was the Orthodox Christian teaching that Mary was the Mother of God. There was a great debate and controversy, much conflict, over the centuries, those early centuries. It was not until 451 in the Council of Chalcedon that we had the phrase, true God, true man, and then not much was done with that. That was about where it was until the 19th century, when studies, critical studies again, began to look at those Christian origins. But if Jesus was human, the Church claimed Jesus was also God. And so that made Mary a God-bearer, or the Mother of God. And it's interesting, in Roman Catholic piety to this day, Mary is a center of much devotion. It was 1864. When the Pope decreed that Mary was immaculately conceived herself. Thus, she was a perfect instrument for bringing forth this Word made flesh. And it was in 1950, as recent as 1950, that another papal decree declared that Mary had been bodily assumed into heaven. And as some have said, Mary has been defined as the ideal woman. Now, the feminist movement has challenged that, because that ideal woman was defined by males, by an all-male church. And Mary, of course, in that ethereal image created by the church, is submissive, obedient, chaste, hardly a Jewish mother. But when you read the scriptures, you get another picture. Oh, to be sure, she's visited by an angel in Luke's story, and Matthew as well. Scholars generally feel that those birth narratives have been added to the beginning of both Gospels. But in any case, what they were trying to say is what other ancient peoples said about other ancient heroes, that this one was special, that this one was from God. I don't know if they thought about it literally or not. Certainly, symbolically, it was true. But if they did think about it literally, then one wonders about this passage in the third chapter of Mark's Gospel. Jesus is about his ministry, and the word on the street is, as he comes home, that he's out of his mind, that he's mad. And his mother and his brothers go out to bring him home. They go out to bring him home because of the rumors that are being spread about him. And as I read the gospel stories, the gospel accounts of Mary, I choose to see her as a Jewish mother. I want you to know that I called Rabbi Alan Alpert in order to ask him about whether or not it was okay to talk about a Jewish mother, because it is a stereotype, of course. Well, fortunately, Alan wasn't home, but I talked to Anna, his lovely wife, who is a Jewish mother. And she gave me permission to talk about a Jewish mother. She said, as long as you intend it honorably. And I assured her, I intend it honorably. I see Mary as a model, as a Jewish mother, as a human mother, as a parent who yearned for her child. I see her in all of her humanness, which gives us encouragement and can make her a model for our devotion, not some ethereal image of a bloodless feminine, but rather this woman who bore this child, for whom she cared, nurtured him, followed him, pursued him, and was hurt by him. Mary, a Jewish mother, on Mother's Day, a mother who is an example of that bonding, that wonderful, beautiful human bonding of parent and child. And I like Mary as a model because she tells me that with all of the potential beauty and wonder of the human family, of human ties that bind, of the bonding in family community, she tells me that human community in the family is not always easy, that it's potentially also painful and brings with it potential brokenness. Now, wouldn't it be wonderful if we all had perfect families, if there were perfect parents raising perfect children? But it simply isn't so. If we could have two-parent families raising the children, a University of Chicago recent study says all would be better. Well, of course it would. But thank God, we are not left in hopelessness or despair. We have the picture of a Mary. And it wasn't easy for Mary to raise Jesus. We have those little signals in the gospel. The Song of Simeon, for example, taking the baby in his arms at the birth of Jesus, the circumcision of Jesus, and saying to Mary, a sword will go through your heart. Well, what parent is there that doesn't know now and again a sword piercing their heart? Or the second chapter that Luke tells us that story of Jesus left behind in Jerusalem when he says, don't you know I have to be about my Father's business? And Mary, hurt, confused, pondering these things in her heart, one wonders if Gabriel had really stood on her shoulder and whispered in her ear, why she didn't dismile at all of this. No, she was a Jewish mother who went through it just like you go through it. And following this one was not an easy task. She stood at the foot of his cross. She saw him in anguish crucified. And the Pietà is an image that's imprinted upon our minds as this mother holds her crucified son. I like Mary as a model because she tells me that whatever the ideal may be, whatever sociological studies may tell us, whatever the church may advocate, the human situation is messy. It can be very painful. There is woundedness. And we have to make do oftentimes with less than ideal situations and relationships. And so we see Mary as a sign of hope, because she also tells us that to raise a child is to fight cultural conformity. The word on the street was that he was out of his mind. She yielded to the pressure. She went after him. She wanted to bring him home. It's not easy to raise a creative, free spirit. There's such community pressure. There's such demand, such cultural conformity that's demanded of us. Do your kids play soccer? Do they march in the band? Do they play sports at school? Do they sing in the choir? Do they do 101 other things that are organized for them to do? Are you choosing what your children do? Are you making the decisions, or are you going along with what everybody else is doing? Are you signing up your kids for some things that maybe in your heart you feel you hadn't ought to sign them up for, so that you give them some time just to be kids? But then what if they fall behind the neighborhood kids? I mean, it's not easy, folks, is it? Raising children is not easy. There is a tremendous pressure in the community and the culture, and parents need to stand apart and say, am I simply being swept along with the tide, or am I deciding, am I determining how my child will be shaped and that in which with which my child will be shaped? It's not easy. Mary felt the pressure. She wanted to bring him home. It's not easy to raise a free spirit and let them go. I read the little passage from Acts because after the resurrection and the ascension, Luke tells us there that the disciples gathered in the upper room, and they gathered with some of the women, and Mary, the mother of Jesus, was there, and his brothers. And that tells me that even where there's brokenness and woundedness and confusion and misunderstanding, there's always the potential, the possibility for reconciliation. Mary was able to pray with that early community that was the consequence of this one, her son, who had embarrassed her and who had hurt her. She was able to pray with James, his brother, who became the pillar of that Jerusalem church. It's another whole sermon, but don't worry, I won't give it to you, but just, I was thinking about how interesting it is that James became the pillar of the conservative Jerusalem church. It took a Paul to have a vision, a grander vision, a bigger vision of bringing this work, this ministry to the whole world. Maybe James couldn't grow enough to be able to break out of his Jewishness, but he grew enough to see in his brother somebody special. And he became a leader of that movement in the home community. And I like the fact that in this story we have also a pointer to that larger community that transcends the blood family. All honor and thanksgiving to God for the blood ties that bind us. But Jesus had to say to his mother, or said to the crowd that kept his mother from him, who is my mother? Who are my brothers and sisters? Those that do the will of God. And thereby Jesus was saying that there is something thicker than blood. It is that faith vision that binds a community together. It is that larger community that calls us, that enables us to fly, to soar, that inspires us and calls the best out of us, the transcending of the family in a larger human community. But thank God for those who are able within the family, the intimate ties of family, together to experience that larger community of faith. This congregation has been blessed this morning at the 8:30 service. Two granddaughters of Marvin, Thelma Bottoma. Thelma, diagnosed with cancer. Always a beautiful family, Marvin, Thelma. Five kids, always in and out of that house at Leonard and Prune. A lot of living in that house. And then the next generation comes along. And then Thelma's diagnosed with very serious cancer. And what happens? I see the intensity of the bonding. I see the children dropping in all the time. And I see the grandchildren coming around. I see the grandchildren coming at 8:30 and kneeling here at the rail with Marv and Thelma, Gramps and Grandma. And then I see Julie and Susan saying, for Mother's Day, we would like to affirm our faith, and we're going to try to get Grandma there. And she was here this morning. And she saw her granddaughters kneel, and then she knelt with her granddaughters at this table. From the kitchen table to the Lord's table, I tell you what, that's powerful, and that's beautiful, and that's just so moving. And I've been with this family too, in all kinds of situations. Hattie, named after one by whose grave I stood as the family shoveled in the dirt in that earthy acknowledgement of the reality of death. I've been there, marriages, baptisms, and housewarmings, and I know them as models of the deepest and the best of that bonding in family that is celebrated in the larger family. And I want to tell you, it doesn't get any better than that. We are invited in our families to the deepest, most meaningful human experience. And we come here in ritual and rite to celebrate it in the larger community. And I want you to know that as the human drama was wrought out in human flesh, the drama of salvation, God is in the human. God is in between us and the experience of love one for the other is the experience of God. A young couple stood here yesterday and wrote their own vows and spoke them to each other. And in deep emotion expressed their love in discovery. And I could say to them, you don't know anything yet. For having fallen in love and now beginning to work at being in love, you'll discover between you the love of God. For if we don't know the love of God in the other, we'll know not the love of God at all. My favorite Broadway musical, Les Miserables, Cosette sings to the dying Jean Valjean, to love another person is to see the face of God.